Berylum Sports.
Hello and welcome to the Verulam Sport Podcast. Every week, the team behind the award-winning Radio Verulam Sport Show will provide you with the most relevant news from the local and regional sporting scenes, whilst keeping you in the picture with national and international bulletins from the world of sport. There will be topical debates, regular interviews from local talent, and chats with those big-name guests that are a mainstay of Verulam Sport. As always, this is your show, every bit as much as it is ours. So, check out Verulam Sport across social media and get involved. For now, prepare yourself for this week's action-packed Verulam Sport Podcast.
Hello and welcome back to Verulam Sport Podcasting. And this week we're celebrating the return of the Premier League as the football addict here at Verulam and also the self-confessed stat guru of the Premier League. It is my time of the year. You know, I'm so happy. But, of course, I have to have a teammate with me. Any sort of team sport has to be about the team. And I've got Graham Griffin here with me today to be talking all about the Premier League. So, are you excited for this chat, Graham?
Jess, as always, and you are the St. Albans Radio Verulam Stato of the whole of our Hertfordshire, which I'm delighted to chat to, and seeing your statistics is absolutely amazing. However, as always, I'm going to put a slightly different slant, so can't wait to get going.
Yeah, and that's why I love chatting to you, because obviously together, stats and philosophy and also psychology matter so much to a club. I will be the first to admit that there are drawbacks on data, but I think it does give you good insight, and then I think it springboards into your perspective from a tactical and psychology analysis into these teams. But without further ado, let's get into the first team, which is Chelsea. Now, they're one of the teams that are teetering on the edge of Champions League qualification. But recently, we've kind of seen a regression in the team. The defence is a weak issue, and the goalkeeper is really, really holding them back. The keeper, Kepa, who last season obviously thought that he was manager when he argued with Maurizio Sarri, I think he's forgotten how to play goalkeeper because maybe he thinks he's manager that much. But he has been absolutely awful this season. In fact, he's posted some of the worst data, not just in England, but in Europe in terms of save percentages. And in terms of the swear word that Tony doesn't like, XG, he is one of the worst underperformers in terms of saving goals this season. But also looking at their attacking data, there's a real loss in potency. And focusing on striker Tammy Abraham, who really had a good start to the season. He looked like he was fitting into the Premier League after a few years on loan to lower clubs. He's really regressed as well. His XG per shot has gone down. His finishing percentage has gone down as well. So throwing it to you, Graham, obviously the data here has shown you a little bit of regression in Chelsea, but they're still a top four side, but they don't have the top four form. So is this a psychology thing as well for such a young team? Have they maybe lost a little bit of confidence?
Absolutely, Jess. And what's interesting for me is that I actually think they're in fourth position at the moment on 48 points. And if we look at that, they've had 14 wins out of 29 games. So that's not far off a 50% shoot. And I actually think that is really, really good for an English manager and English players. Now, we know the youth set up at Chelsea for many a year, their strategy was to buy the best kids around Europe and then potentially loan them out and sell them on and make a profit and then take the best of the best, if that makes sense. And we've got that in the likes of Zouma. We've got that in the likes of Mount and Abraham. They've had a few seasons in the lower leagues, but also so has Frank. Obviously, he only had one season at Derby, but he did well to get into the playoffs. And he demonstrated a lot of benefits there. So I think they're doing really, really well. And this little blip, as you say, from a statistical perspective, I think that's potentially what's going on from a perspective of managing the energy in a young player. So they're probably potentially on a bit of burnout before, obviously, what happened with the pandemic. But at the same time, I think what they were doing early doors, full of beans, and Frank allowed them to just get on with it, hence why they were lethal. I think this is very normal for them to get through this difficult purple patch. I think they'll come strong again. But in particular, for me, next season's the key for them players and that club.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you here that they're a team that are kind of learning the way to play under Lampard, but also for many to play in the Premier League. And I think a thing, again, from a statistical perspective that backs it up is their PPDA data. So that's their passes per defensive action has actually reduced. So they're getting better at the press. They're getting better at those situations that Lampard wants them to play in. And do you think as well, just a final quick answer on the burnout of the players, do you think that this 3 month period, therefore maybe of a little bit of rest, maybe more focus on tactics, will that Chelsea team then come into form because they've had that time off to maybe refocus?
Totally. And I think the tactical side of it, I think, isn't a problem. Tactically, they've been quite engaging to watch, and I think they've been quite exciting. The issue has been the naivety of the players. So making an accelerated run that they're not going to get to, which leaves a gap behind them, is potentially the problem. Whereas a bit more experience, which comes with time, then they probably would hold that run a little bit more to check for danger and see what other colleagues were around. So therefore, it might sort of just give them that edge to get the ball back if there's a counter-attack on. And if you look at their losses, they've had 9 losses and 6 draws, which suggests to me that actually they've either been very close or they've been 2 goals out because of that sort of tactical awareness. I think physically they'll be recovered and repaired, so I think they'll be more explosive on the return next week.
Well, that will please a lot of the Blues fans who maybe had a bit of blues when they got really kind of turned over by Bayern Munich in the Champions League. But they might then make it into the Champions League, and you've kind of answered there that it might be a confidence issue as well. But one team that I think were confident in their manager last season, but questions have been a little bit this year. But on the Verulam Sport podcast, you've explained your actual belief in Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. We're talking about Manchester United here. And you've stated actually your positive feelings towards him. And I would say, in many ways, I do believe in the project that he's doing at Manchester United, because he's got good defensive data. And I think a lot of the best teams in kind of Premier League history do build from the back, not just in their play style, but also from their actual ability to stop goals going in. We look at Chelsea, we look at the Invincibles. Those are teams that didn't let in a lot of goals. And then you can build on good attacks. And that's kind of where their problem has been this season. It's been poor in attack. They've just not been that exciting or that good at creating big chances, good chances at that as well. Now, one of the things that Manchester United tried to address this with was the acquisition of Bruno Fernandes, a very, very exciting creative midfielder. Initially, looking at the results, and this is maybe where you'll argue with me here, Graham, but on the eye test, with better results, Fernandes seems to have improved things. But looking at the data, Man United have actually remained stagnant. They're still not one of the best attacks in the Premier League. But what I will add to this is we shall probably see Pogba and Rashford back into the Man United team fully fit when the Premier League restarts. So what are your feelings on Manchester United then? Am I being too critical of the new team under Solskjaer with Bruno Fernandes in the side?
Potentially with Fernandes, because I thought he brought new impetus and I thought he gave a lift and a boost to the players around them. Because I don't know if the data suggests this, but from the eye test, as you say, I think Man United were going back to their original roots of why they were so successful in the 90s and the noughties and Fergie, which was they were quite strong in their counter-attack play, and it was quite exciting. And I think, again, back to the youthness of Rashford and Lingard and Greenwood that was coming through, I think, again, they were making the wrong decisions. So they had plenty of attack play, and maybe they just didn't get their shots off in time, so they weren't as clinical. But watching Man United over the season, I thought, wow, this is fantastic. They were playing back into the old style, but not getting the results. Fernandes seemed to just... Maybe it's because he just got his positional play right and he scored some important goals, or he set up and assisted some important goals, and United went on an 8-game run, didn't they, where they didn't defeat. But I think back to your earlier point about the defensive shape, I think that's definitely what Ollie's been working on. He's now building that Christmas tree, if you like, of that defence, that spine of defence, midfield, and then attack. So the Maguire acquisition, obviously under the noses of Man City, which would have sorted Pep's problems, I think there's absolutely, in my view, Maguire has been a massive acquisition and will be for many years to come because they were struggling there. I'm not sure what the data suggests on that, though.
Well, Maguire actually coming into the team was one of the best defenders, especially for aerial duels. That was one thing that he was better than Van Dijk at. And there was a lot of comparisons with, I'd say, the best defender in the league and maybe in the world, centre-back-wise, with Van Dijk and Maguire. I think that Maguire was an absolutely brilliant asset. And I think the problem that a lot of people have is that they don't see him winning things, so they go, oh, Man United have overspent there. But I think he is a really, really good player. It's the team around him. What Maguire does as well, and the data kind of backs up a little bit, but you just watch him in a game. He is playing out from the back. A lot of Man United plays actually come from Maguire himself, which is very rare for a centre-back in the modern era. You know, it mostly comes from creative midfielders or even a DM like Fernandinho, but it is coming from Maguire, and he is at times kind of playing almost a defensive midfield role as he runs into the middle of the park. He is a threatening player to play against. So I think for a modern team playing a modern style of football, I think Maguire is a great, great asset, both in terms of the eye test and in terms of data as well. And as I'm saying there, in terms of the data, one of the best defences in the Premier League, I think Man United can be happy with that acquisition. Just one last question to you, Graham, on Manchester United before we move on. My problem with them attacking-wise is the big chances created. They're bottom half of the table, and that means that their non-penalty XG is actually quite low. Do you think with Pogba fit, Rashford fit, and Bruno Fernandes fit in the side, maybe Fred kind of growing into that defensive midfielder role, do you think that we will see more creativity from a Man United team with a fully fit side?
Absolutely, and I think they've got to resolve the Pogba situation. I think he's just got to go now. That's, you know, he is a top quality footballer, but you can't have somebody with that attitude or that stature within the club really having tantrums, throwing his toys out. You know, it's a team game, as we've said, and I think let's move on from that, because sometimes it's not about the best players. Maguire, as you've mentioned, which we agree on, Jace, funny enough, the eye test and the data backs up, doesn't it? That's a first for us. That's brilliant. And that's when the data and the eye test is a brilliant combination. But I just think you're right. I think Fred is held back a little bit and he's not necessarily thinking, I'm first team choice here type thing. So they need to unleash, a bit like the class of 92, let some of the players move on to give them that opportunity to take responsibility and blossom. So I think there's definitely good things to come from United.
Yeah, they're a team with a lot of good young players as well. I mean, Rashford, God, how young is he? And he's already breaking some of those young goal-scoring records in the Premier League. But another team that's filled with good young talent, and as you said on the podcast, maybe the Portuguese B squad, it's Wolves. They are a really fantastic team, and I can't really talk positively enough about them. They're a team in form coming into these fixtures. Obviously, we shall see if that translates over a continuation of form. Goodness me, their attack is frightening. They've got Adama Traore, an absolutely built-up muscle machine, and so quick as well. Then you've got Diogo Jota on the other wing, and Jimenez through the middle, who's probably one of the cleverest forwards in the Premier League. My only concern for Wolves, again, is even though they're producing top three, top five, they're definitely one of the best teams in the league. What holds them back is a leaky defence. Goalkeeper is pretty poor, but I think there's a propensity of errors from the whole back line. Is this something that you've observed as well? Because they do play that kind of football where they draw in and then go on the counter, and that does allow for big chances to be conceded. Is this something that Wolves have to worry about if they're going to qualify for Champions League or Europa League?
Yeah, brilliant spot, Jace. I totally agree, because, and there's two reasons to that. You could have not the best defenders when you're playing that counter-attack game because it leaves gaps. Or you could be in a situation where they've just not got that right, and the team that they're playing against is high pressing them. So I've noticed with Wolves, they struggle against a team that really presses them and pushes them into a corner because they can't get out, and their game is to get out and score quick. And they struggle with that. Also, let's talk about Connor Cody. He came through the Liverpool ranks. He's naturally a midfielder, and he's been pushed from Nuno back into central defence. So when it works for them, they have that three central defence pairing, because Cody will step forward to plug that gap. But when they're up against it, they're going into that five. So it really depends. It's really hit and miss with them. What I like about Wolves, though, is that they've played 29. They've only lost six games. Only lost six games out of 29. That is incredible. So if you look at every other team above them, apart from Liverpool, they've lost more. Man City 7, Leicester 8, Chelsea 9, Man United 8. That is incredible. They've won 10 and they've drawn 13. So imagine, like any team in development, if you can turn some of them draws into a win, that's an extra 4 points, for an example. So they'd definitely be in that fourth position. And I've backed them to be in my underdogs. I'm categorising them in the likes of Sheffield United, who are having a great season as well. I think Wolves are the team to break that top four as an outsider. I really do, for them reasons.
Yeah, I like the shout as well. It's just their games against, as you rightly said, the smaller teams that play the more defensive football, that don't allow them to play it out, play the good football that they like to do on the counter-attack. So it will be interesting to see. I think those one of the reasons that I've been a little bit apprehensive about breaking into the top four. But in terms of their personnel, midfield and in the forward positions, they are very, very gifted. And they've got two really good wing-backs as well, in Doherty and Vinagre. But we shall see what happens. Johnny is actually quite good as well, I should say, the other left-back there. We'll just see if they improve with their centre-backs. As you said there, Cody is not a natural centre-back, and that doesn't bode well for Premier League football. But one team who have mastered defending this season, they have defended their way into a possible Champions League place, it's Sheffield United. It's another team that we really wax lyrical about. They've also got a game in hand. The only drawback is a lack of attack, but when they do attack, it is in very high quality. So they don't go for quantity, they go for very high quality chances and maybe score one or two goals, kind of max, a game. What I will say is there's a high overperformance in terms of XG in defence, but that's because of a really, really good goalkeeper between the sticks. Right. Dean Henderson is amazing. I have to say that Man United are going to have a really hard choice between De Gea and him next season. But for this season, Sheffield United have him. What do you think is going to happen there with Sheffield United? Because they're a team that have to remain so, so efficient if they're going to get this Champions League place. But will we be seeing the Sheffield United Blades having a European tour next season?
I mean, wow, for Yorkshire folk to leave their county, Jace, what a treat it would be for them to get on that train or plane, whatever is allowed to do at that point in time. But I think for Sheffield United, I totally agree with everything you've said. I think this is just one step too far this season. And I like your shout about them being quite clinical and waiting for the real opportunity. And if we look at Billy Sharp, he's a goal scorer, right? He hasn't scored many in the Premier League, but this guy, he's a goal scorer. He's got an eye for goal if he gets the chance. They don't create too many chances from what I see. But I also like this McBride, or McBurney, I think he's called. He's a young striker up and coming. He's had a few chances and a few goals this season. I just like they have got some real threat up front. It's just that actually they can't find that extra creativity and flair to get round and create. But they really press and push and keep control in the final third of the field to really press teams to make a mistake. That's what they're waiting for. They're like a pack of hyenas, just ready to attack. And I think that's excellent. But I think, although they've only lost seven games, and you're right, they've got a game in hand, they've won 11 in the first season back in the Premier League. It's incredible. And I want to see them do really well for that reason. But I actually feel I've got this funny sense with Sheffield United, because these are real good ex-pros, been down the lower leagues and come through. I think this break is going to go against them mentally. Just an assumption. I've just got this feeling that I think these lads are semi-retired, think, bloody hell, we've had a great season, haven't we? So I think it's going to be tough for Wilder to keep them motivated. So I'd be very, very surprised if they get into that top four. But you never know, do you?
That is a really fascinating perspective. Now, I hadn't thought of it from that, because obviously, probably going into the season, Sheffield United thought, right, we're going to have to stay in the Premier League. And in many ways, because of this time off, as you said there, they're probably thinking, well, our job's done. You know, Europe is good, but maybe rest easy and build into next season. I really hadn't thought of that. And that's fantastic, again, why I like talking to you on this, Graham. Just in terms of their fantastic kind of shooting abilities, their XG per shot, Sheffield United, is the fifth best in the league. And they're actually sixth best for big chances created. I mean, it is crazy numbers that they produce, but they just have 28 goals in 26 games. They don't shoot often, but when they do, you think it's going to go in. And that is one of the really interesting foibles of the team. I myself, just a final perspective on Sheffield United, I think they'll do Europe, as in they'll make the Europa League. They might nick seventh or something like that, but I agree that maybe Champions League might be too much. My reason being that the two teams that we're coming on to, Arsenal and Tottenham, are much, much worse than Sheffield United.
Here we go, the North London derby. I've been waiting for this one, Jess.
Now, obviously, as you said there, it's the North London derby, and I am from the red half, and some would say the better half. In terms of it, I will be coming at this from a non-biased data perspective. So looking at Tottenham, have they improved since Mourinho has been in charge? Well, I'll have to say actually a no. And their defence has been very, very poor. Their attack has been slightly overperforming, but a lack of chances being created again. They've kind of got the problem that Man United have, in the sense that they're just not doing bits. And I think it kind of revolves back to their defence being poor. They don't have the ball very much. When they do, they're kind of panicked. They're just very, very blessed that they have amazingly talented striker in Heung-min Son. Obviously, Kane is coming back, but Kane is not a creative midfielder. He can assist, he can do that. We've seen him play a more midfielder kind of role with England, but that's not what he's best at. He's a goal scorer. So in terms of the data, it doesn't fill me with confidence for Tottenham, for the Lily Whites. I think they're really going to struggle. But maybe I've missed something here, Graham. What can you add to how Tottenham will approach getting into Europe and the Champions League?
Well, we should expect Spurs to be the best in all teams on the return to the Premier League, because Mourinho broke the lockdown rules and had his players in parks training early, didn't he? I think it was a week after shutdown he had them going. So you should argue that his team should be the fittest and the most focused and most ready prepared to go. So you know, it, from that perspective, you would expect it. I feel similar to you. I think Spurs have lost their way. And my thinking there is that I think they're at the end of their five-year cycle. So, you know, when the likes of Dele Alli was coming through and Kieran Dyer, I think Pochettino had them really primed. And every year they were developing, they were synergizing as a team. And, you know, to get to that Champions League final, what a brilliant semi-final against Eindhoven, I think it was, wasn't it? And that was brilliant. And I never thought they were going to beat Liverpool, but I thought it was a brilliant achievement. And then with what happened with them last season, something happened there at the beginning. You could see the relationship had broken down between Poch, the club, or players. You just didn't see the right upbeat body language from a lot of the players. So I think they've come to that end of that cycle. I think the team needs a little bit dismantling and built up again, keeping key players like Son's fantastic, I think, and Harry Kane and Dele Alli and players like that. We can never bet against Mourinho. He's always got something up his sleeve. So although I feel they're not going to make the top four, again, you just can't bet against Mr. Mourinho, can you? He's just a gem at driving results. So maybe he will benefit by having this break, if you like, because now when they do come back, it should be his team. It's pretty much like being a pre-season for him, apart from being able to buy and sell. So this should now make or break Mourinho at Spurs. I've got this funny feeling that not much is going to happen for him at Spurs. Not sure why.
Yeah, I think the problem is, though, what you've cited, the fact that the club are in a kind of transition phase. And as good as Mourinho is, he's the ultimate pragmatist, and he does get psychology going at teams. I think it's a step too far, because Tottenham have a lot of problems that need to be worked on. And I think it's a personnel thing that really does need new faces into the club. Alderweireld and Vertonghen are great, great defenders, but their best years behind them. Sanchez is a great defender, but he needs somebody to play with him. And Tottenham need to kind of enter a new era. Just looking at their defensive data, and I think kind of title-winning teams, the best teams in the league, are the ones with the best defences. Tottenham's data has been comparable to the likes of Norwich rather than the teams of Liverpool, Man City or Leicester, who they're vying to get into Europe with. You know, their XG conceded is comparable. Again, they're actually worse than Norwich on that one. They've had as many attempts from set plays conceded as those bottom teams. Big chances conceded are huge. It is worrying data there for Tottenham. And like I said, I don't think tactics are going to be enough to sort this. Because if they do play defensively, then they might lose that attacking edge that they've had that's buoyed them so far. That is what has kept them up so far, is their fantastic attack. And
agreed.
If they devalue that, that could be a problem. But let's move on then to the other half of North London. And this one's going to be an emotive topic for me. Arsenal ninth with 40 points. And as an Arsenal fan, I think I've witnessed the worst football that the club has played for many, many years under Unai Emery. Then Arteta came in with the promise of beautiful Pep football. But we shall see if the Wenger era will come into Wenger 2.0 in an improved form. Because so far, looking at the data, Understat places Arsenal as 12th in X points since Arteta arrived. We've had more defensive stopouts, but in terms of big chances created, XG, all those sort of attacking data which you'd associate with Pep Guardiola and beautiful Barca-style football, we've been lacking. We've been comparable to Sheffield United and Bournemouth in terms of creativity, which just isn't good enough for a team to be in the top four. Only 16 shots inside the box since Arteta has come, with an XG of just 2.87. That is really, really worrying. That XG for Arsenal is actually less than Rashford and Mounted, who's been injured since January 16th in Arteta's tenure. So in terms of it, Aubameyang has been on fire, but a huge, huge overperformance. Like I said, the defence is a little bit better with the data, but there's not much here that I can believe confidently that Arsenal can make top four or even Europa League. I think we're going to come about 8th or 9th. Tottenham might be the team that do worse than us. But I don't know, Graham. Is there anything positive that I can look at Arsenal? Maybe from their tactical improvement in play style?
No. So everything you said, I think, makes total sense, and I would agree with, because albeit they've only lost 6 games this season, equally they've only won 9. So there's been a lot of draws in there, and them draws have been dreadful. It's not the Arsenal we know. However, having said that, which, you know, this isn't a positive, but it is if it makes sense, is that I think now we have to realign our expectations for Arsenal. And I think they are where they should be, considering the squad depth or the squad talent. It is what it is. And the problem for Arsenal fans, such as yourself, is that you've been exposed to this wonderful timeline that Arsenal have had right back to even George Graham before Arsene Wenger, but all that time in the 90s and early noughties, You know, that was such a pinnacle. I remember back then, you know, everyone was thinking, oh my God, this is so great to watch. What's going to happen when it stops? And obviously with time, it has stopped. So I think there's just a massive rebuilding of what that club's expectations should be. And I think it is going to be that 8th to 10th, if not 12th, to be honest. There's a lot of work to be done. And equally, there's a lot of money to be spent, which is potentially, you shouldn't have to do that. But that's just the way of the world of football at the moment. Maybe that's going to change after the pandemic. Hopefully it will. And all this money won't be just wasted. But I think the one big positive is Mikel Arteta. I'm going to say he's a good stopgap, I think. And because it's his first management job, he's come from the school of thought of Pep. He's actually was an excellent leader as a player at Everton and Arsenal anyway. He had a lot of respect. But I just think it's going to be many a year until Arsenal can get back to anything great. I think there's a lot of squad issues that need to get sorted out. So I think, unfortunately, this season, the Champions League is beyond them. And even potentially, I think we'll do well just to get a Europa League spot. But definitely, you know, I think Arteta will get shoots of improvement in the coming seasons. But I think this is really where the expectation should lie for Arsenal over the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, I think it's a rebuild project at the moment. And I personally am very positive that Arteta is going to bring the right style of football to the Emirates, but it's just probably not this season. It might be too late for the players like Aubameyang. So I agree with you. I don't think Arsenal are going to make Champions League football. But that is the end of our discussion. So just a really quick answer then. Who is going to make the Champions League out of the teams that we've discussed there? Is it going to be Chelsea, Man United? Or is it going to be one of those different teams that we've discussed?
I'm going to choose two, Jace. It's going to be either one of these, assuming Leicester stay in the top three. So I'm going to go with Chelsea or Wolverhampton Wanderers.
Oh, I love that. And I would love to see Wolves in Europe because I think they're a team that have done really well to create a good, positive squad. I'm going to say Wolves, but also I'm going to go with a Maverick choice of Sheffield United just because I want to see them there. I don't think, in my mind, I'm thinking that obviously Wolves are the better team and will probably do it, but I'm hoping against hope that Sheffield United to do it. And I want to see Wilder going wild in Europe next season.
But for now, love it. And what a year to try and see either of those two teams, Wolves and Sheffield United, get to the top four. It really throws a spanner in the works for Premier League football, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and again, that would add to the narrative that the Premier League is the best league in the world because anything can happen. And that would be fantastic to see the Blades doing that. But from us, that is all that we've got time for today. And I think we've really thrashed out some really useful ideas. And as always, we tell people to go and get joining in with our social media feeds. You can tweet at Verulam Sport. You can Facebook us. You can email us, sport@radioverulam.com. But from us, thank you so much for your time today, Graham.
You're welcome. Thanks, Jess. Really enjoyed.
And tune in to the full Verulam Sport podcast coming up on Friday.